It didn't start as scandal. It started as jokes that landed a little too softly. Glances that lingered a beat too long. Meetings that ran late for reasons no one wrote down. At first, it felt almost harmless, like an office secret everyone pretended not to see because naming it would make it real. We were professionals during the day, titles, KPIs, strategy decks. At night, something else took over. Lines blurred. Desks stopped being just desks. Accountability thinned until it felt optional. I remember realizing something was wrong, not because of who was sleeping with whom, but because of who kept getting ahead, and who quietly stalled out. Promotions sounded less like recognition and more like pillow talk. Ethics didn't collapse all at once. They eroded, slowly, seductively, until lust became a strategy, and pretending otherwise became part of the job. I stayed longer than I should have. Most of us did. Because when everyone is complicit, leaving feels like betrayal, and staying feels like survival. I had been with the company long enough to recognize patterns before they were named. A mid-sized consultancy with a glossy brand and a messy interior, the kind of place that sold clarity to clients while operating on instinct and appetite inside its own walls. We were Irish, mostly. Educated, sharp, ambitious. The office sat above a cafe that never quite closed, the smell of coffee bleeding into our mornings, the hum of conversation bleeding into our evenings. I was a senior associate then, not management, not junior, perched in that uncomfortable middle where you see more than you're supposed to and have less power than people assume. The first signs weren't sexual. They were structural. Project teams reshuffled without explanation. Performance feedback softened for some and hardened for others. One colleague's missed deadlines were reframed as creative process, while another's minor error became a learning opportunity, documented and filed. It felt uneven, but unevenness is easy to excuse when you're busy. We were always busy. Then there were the after-hours drinks. They started as celebrations. A pitch won, a deadline met, a Friday survived. We drank because that's what we did. The pub downstairs knew our names. At some point, the drinks stopped being optional. If you left early, you missed something. A decision, a tone shift, a connection. The real meetings began after the official ones ended. I noticed the couples before I noticed the culture. Two people, arriving together more often than chance would allow. A hand lingering at a lower back in lift. A door closed a little too quickly in an empty conference room. Offices are pressure cookers. People bond. People fall into each other. I'd seen it before, elsewhere. What was different here was how open it was, and how strategic. Managers slept with direct reports. Partners slept with managers. Colleagues slept sideways, diagonally, up. It wasn't about romance. There were no declarations, no secrecy fueled by passion. It felt transactional, without being explicit. Favors were never asked out loud. They were implied, delivered through tone, timing, access. I remember a project lead who struggled publicly. Missed numbers, lost a client. The kind of thing that usually leaves a mark. Instead, she was quietly reassigned to a high-profile account and later promoted. People whispered, not because they disapproved, but because they were curious. Who was she seeing now? Who had she stopped seeing? The gossip didn't shame. It mapped. I told myself it wasn't my business. I told myself work and sex had always coexisted badly, that this was just another version of that. But the atmosphere shifted. Meetings felt charged, not intellectually, but emotionally. People watched each other more closely. Alliances formed and dissolved overnight. Trust thinned. The warning signs were there, but they were wrapped in charm. Everyone smiled. Everyone insisted we were adults. Everyone joked about it without saying it. The phrase "we're all grown-ups here" became a shield. It was said whenever someone raised an eyebrow, whenever a boundary brushed against. I wasn't sleeping with anyone at work. That became a defining feature without my consent. It wasn't a moral stance, it was instinct. I'd learned early that mixing desire with dependency rarely ends cleanly. But abstaining didn't make me invisible. It made me suspect. Neutrality reads as judgment in a culture that runs on complicity. I started to feel it in small ways. Being left off emails. Decisions made without me. Invitations that arrived late. Nothing I could point to. Everything I could feel. The office had its own gravity. Once you were inside it, it pulled you towards certain people, certain rooms, certain nights. Refusing the pull didn't make you righteous. It made you peripheral. The escalation didn't come with a scandal. It came with normalization. When something happens often enough, it stops registering as transgression. The office calendar filled with offsites that blurred work and leisure. Hotels booked under the banner of strategy. Dinners that turned into mornings. Nobody asked for receipts beyond the financial ones. I was assigned to lead a cross-functional initiative, a chance to prove I was ready for the next step. The team included people who were already entangled, emotionally and physically. I walked into rooms, carrying the weight of unspoken histories. A disagreement wasn't just about scope. It was about who had slept with whom, who owed whom, who was nursing a quiet resentment from a night that meant more to one person than the other. Authority lost its shape. A manager would challenge me in a meeting, then defer to me privately. Or the opposite. Feedback came coded. Praise felt conditional. Criticism felt personal. I found myself second-guessing everything. Not because I lacked confidence, but because the rules had changed without being written down. I was approached, eventually. Not crudely. Not explicitly. A senior partner invited me to dinner, to talk about my future. I'd had those dinners before, elsewhere. Mentorship often happens over food, but this felt different. The wine flowed freely. The conversation drifted. Compliments landed with weight. You spoke about loyalty, about trust, about how hard it was to know who was really committed to the firm. I didn't accuse him of anything. I didn't need to. The implication hovered between us, unspoken but clear. Excess could be negotiated. Advancement could be eased. Nothing had to be said. I declined gently. I cited timing, workload, personal boundaries phrased as logistics. He smiled, nodded, paid the bill. The next week, my project lost a resource. No explanation. The week after that, my performance review shifted tone. Suddenly, I was solid instead of exceptional. Potential became something to be monitored, not rewarded. Around me, the office tightened. People aligned themselves with power through proximity. Bedrooms became boardrooms by other means. I watched colleagues compromise themselves in ways they later pretended were choices. I watched others rationalize their advantage as merit. Everyone told themselves a story they could live with. I wasn't immune to desire. That was the hardest part to admit. The environment was intoxicating. Attention feels like oxygen when you've been holding your breath professionally for years. I understood the temptation. I just couldn't shake the sense that once you crossed that line here, there was no clean way back. Complicity didn't always look like sex. Sometimes it looked like silence. I stayed quiet when I should have named patterns. I laughed at jokes that made my skin crawl. I congratulated promotions I didn't believe in. Survival has a way of sanding down your edges. The cost showed up in my body before my mind caught up. I slept poorly. I replayed conversations. I felt watched, even when alone. Work stopped being about work. It became a maze of signals and consequences. Desire wasn't the problem. Power was. The breaking point came quietly. A junior colleague confided in me after a few drinks. She was exhausted, confused, flattered, scared. A manager had made promises he couldn't formalize. She didn't know how to say no without derailing her career. Listening to her, I heard myself, years earlier, in another office, another version of this story. The repetition hit hard. I realized then that the culture wasn't just permissive, it was predatory in its ambiguity. Nothing was forced, everything was pressured. Consent existed in theory and eroded in practice. I left without a dramatic exit. No confrontation, no email blast. I found another role, handed in my notice, endured the polite surprise. People asked if I'd reconsider. They praised my contributions. They promised change without specifics. I thanked them and stayed firm. The aftermath was quieter than I expected. Some colleagues kept in touch. Others vanished. The office carried on. These systems always do. They absorb loss and rebrand continuity as resilience. From the outside, the place looked the same. Awards, clients, smiling faces on the website. Inside, I knew the cost, not just to me, but to everyone who learned to trade intimacy for security, silence for advancement. The residue of that kind of culture doesn't wash off easily. It lingers in how you trust, how you desire, how you measure your own worth. I didn't report anyone. That decision sits with me. I tell myself I protected myself. I tell myself the system wouldn't have changed. Both can be true. Silence always has a cost. Speaking does too. I chose the one I could carry. Sometimes I run into former colleagues. We exchange updates. We avoid specifics. There's a shared understanding we don't name. A chapter closed without resolution. That, too, is common. What stays with me isn't the sex. It's the way ethics thinned under the weight of ambition. How quickly professionalism became performative. How easily desire was weaponized and normalized. When lust becomes a strategy, everyone loses something, even the ones who appear to win. I've worked in other places since, cleaner ones, still flawed. I recognize the early signs faster now. The jokes, the drinks, the invitations framed as opportunities. I set boundaries earlier. I leave sooner. The office where everyone was sleeping together taught me that culture isn't what you say. It's what you reward, what you excuse, what you let slide because confronting it would cost too much. I learned that careers can survive many things, but integrity erodes quietly, and once it's gone, no promotion gives it back.